Welcome to Today on Broadway for Thursday, June 29th, 2023. I'm Broadway Radio's Matt Tiamanini. Believe it or not, this is not Today on Broadway. I mean, it technically is, but the whole episode will be coming to you in just a minute or so. But after we recorded the episode, we got a bit of breaking news. So I wanted to make sure that we got that in the episode because by the time you hear this episode, you might have already seen it, and I didn't want to wait more than 24 hours for you to get this news. But it was announced on Wednesday evening that the Lincoln Center Theater Broadway revival of Lerner and Lowe's Camelot will end its run at the Vivian Beaumont Theater on Sunday, July 23rd. By that point, it will have played 153 performances, 38 previews, and 115 regular performances. It, of course, was nominated for 5 Tony Awards, but it did not win any of them. The show is directed by Bartlett Shear and features a new book by Aaron Sorkin. It features a really great cast of Andrew Burnap, Philippa Sue, Jordan Donica, Dakin Matthews, Taylor Trench, Marley Talkington, and others. I was supposed to see this show when I was in town in May, and then I ended up not feeling well and not being able to get out of bed, so I'm really disappointed that I didn't get to see it, especially because this is a show that means a lot to me, but it did not get the love that a lot of other Bart Shear, Lincoln Center, big classic golden age musicals do, which is really disappointing. Of course, the question then becomes what goes into the Vivian Beaumont Theater? Will it be another play a la The Skin of Our Teeth or even something like Mike Birbiglia's Old Man in the Pool? Or will we be looking at another musical of some sort, whether it is a golden age show like this, like King and I, like South Pacific, like My Fair Lady? Or will it be something new like Flying Over Sunset? I, for one, would be interested to see what a Lincoln Center production of a Sondheim musical would look like. Maybe Follies? That would be my pick. Maybe Pacific Overtures, although we just had an off-Broadway production at Classic Stage Company fairly recently. But can you imagine a big, grand, gorgeous, lush production of Follies at that gigantic stage at the Vivian Beaumont Theater? That would be sublime as far as I'm concerned. We will have to wait and see what else comes from Lincoln Center in the coming weeks and months, but I would imagine that they would like to have something in there for the fall, which is probably why they decided to close this in July. That means it gives them time to load that out and get something in after Labor Day for the upcoming holiday rush. But for now, you do have 3-ish weeks to see the show Uptown at Vivian Beaumont Theater at Lincoln Center. All right, that's all that I have. I will send you back over to me. You're going to hear my voice in like 15 seconds again with the rest of Today on Broadway. Welcome to Today on Broadway for Thursday, June 29th, 2023. I'm Broadway Radio's Matt Tiamanini.
And I'm arts and culture writer Ashley Steves.
Ashley, welcome back. We've had interesting few days here on the podcast. We had a special episode with me and Robbie on Tuesday. I did a solo episode.
I can't wait
yesterday.
To listen. That came up in my email feed whatever day that was. And yeah. I can't believe I'm going to listen to an episode that I'm not on.
I know. Crazy, crazy. You got to love anything Robbie Rizel related. But we are back and better than ever. Maybe we'll see. If you want to hear all of our betterness, head over to patreon.com/BroadwayRadio, broadwayradio.com/Patreon. Ashley, let's get into the news. And first, we've talked previously about this National Symphony Orchestra Symphonic World Premiere concert production of Rent that Sammy Knold is directing at the Kennedy Center from July 26th through the 28th. Yesterday, they announced the principal cast, and it is a veritable who's who. Again, just 3 days, just a concert, not a full thing. I've seen some people questioning some of like the age differences of all these characters and how are these people all supposed to be friends?
We've got
it's a
space
concert.
To fill. Exactly. Yeah, we could talk about some changes if it makes it to Broadway again, but
yeah,
for now.
Exactly. It's fine. But Ali Stroker will be playing Maureen. Miles Frost will be playing Benny. Jimmy Harrod will be playing Angel. Andrew Barth Feldman, which is where I think a lot of the age issues come into play here,
probably
will be playing Mark. And Alex Boniello will be playing Roger. A fantastic cast. Obviously, the remainder of the cast will be announced at a later time. But they kind of piecemeal sent these out over social media on Wednesday. So maybe there'll be more coming after we record. But a phenomenal cast.
For now.
I'm interested to hear what this sounds like. They're talking about a symphonic world premiere production. So is this just, I'm guessing, just taking kind of the charts that we already have for Rent?
And then, charts, I would assume so, yeah. And then the castings to it
The conductor is Steve Reinecke, who is the principal Pops conductor. Yeah. So that makes sense. But always exciting. Love all of these folks. And we'll be looking forward to hearing all about it when it happens next month. All right. So let's get into a real quick review of the off-Broadway immersive production of The Great Gatsby. Pretty much
number
like
one.
Everybody in my social media feeds was there this week getting to go.
Yes.
All of the influencers,
very
all of
cute
our
outfits,
friends.
Everybody.
Yes, I do not have anything that would be appropriate for this to wear, so I would not be going in cosplay roaring 20s stuff.
Sure.
But this is an immersive and interactive production of The Great Gatsby that was adapted and directed by Alexander Wright. This is the UK's longest running immersive production. It is making its American debut at what is being called Gatsby Mansion. It is actually taking place at Park Central Hotel, New York, which is just around the corner from Carnegie Hall, if you need to place it at 877th Avenue. The company is an eclectic and diverse group of actors, which I think is really good considering this is a very, very white book.
Ooh,
Joel Acosta plays Jay Gatsby. Rob Brinkman plays Nick Carraway. Gillian Ann Abaye plays Daisy Buchanan. Shahzeb Hussein plays Tom Buchanan. Stephanie Rocio plays Jordan Baker. And of course, Claire Saunders of the famous Saunders family plays Myrtle Wilson. Let's run through some of the reviews here, starting first with Chris Jones, who is the Chicago Tribune theater critic, but also writes for other publications, including the Daily News here, says, "This is an inventive and intriguingly populist new staging of an iconic novel that already has informed all manner of adaptations. Here, it is genuinely hard to tell the actors from the customers. Only the elegant design of Vanessa Luke's costumes offers a meaningful distinction." He goes on to then talk about how a very tough stage management team, like, will walk around the floor, and if you have a phone out, even during the intermission, they will tell you to either put it away or leave, because those things did not exist.
And also, that should just happen anyway. Thank you.
Yes, absolutely. Gillian Russo, writing for New York Theater Guide, said, quote, "It is worth noting here that Gatsby is truly both immersive and interactive. You're not just in the world watching the characters around you, but they're actively engaging with you throughout. Besides dancing with them during the aforementioned Charleston, the first of multiple dance breaks, you might supply Nick with a pickup line to use on sophisticated golfer Jordan Baker, take a photo with Jordan, or be enlisted by Gatsby himself as a personal assistant while he fretfully prepares to host Daisy for tea. As such, guests are encouraged to dress to theme, or at least to dress up. I will pass. And you run the risk of Gatsby remarking on it if you don't. Most of you are dressed impeccably," he observes.
Doubly
as he's perfected.
Screwed.
Yeah, I know, exactly. Tim Tiemann, writing for the Daily Beast, said, quote, he kind of talked about the fact that, like, as with most immersive productions, every time you go back, you will see a different version of this. And obviously focusing on Nick, Gatsby, and Daisy is the best way to get it.
Yeah, sure.
But he said, quote, "Did we learn anything new about The Great Gatsby? No, not in the way that Gatsby's full recitation so stunningly opened up Fitzgerald's text," which is a reference to the Elevator Repair Company's production pre-copyright public domain, where they just read the book in a really interesting way. Anyway, he continues, "This immersive experience is more revelry-minded. Although when the world of Gatsby and the Buchanans falls apart, and the main stage is suddenly illuminated by shafts of funeral light, and Gatsby himself appears in a fateful bathing suit, it rightly slows and leans into its foundational profundity." I've talked about the fact that, like, I don't need Gatsby in my life.
Sure.
But I do love an immersive kind of thing, as long as
do
I don't necessarily. Well, I don't love the interactive. I love the immersive.
Okay, fair
enough. To me, there's a difference.
There is a difference, and I'm glad they distinguished it.
Yeah, well, this one's both, though, which is a little problematic. So
Right.
We'll see.
Yeah.
But,
you don't necessarily want to go and have actors harassing you for not wearing a costume.
Correct. And I don't want to be drawn
weird.
In. Like, I'm fine doing, like, little tasks, you know, like the little things that we do in immersive things, but I don't want to be put on the spot.
Together.
That's very uncomfortable.
No.
But anyway.
It's 100% not for me. But, in talking about all of these Gatsby productions that we're about to have and are currently having, whether this is a transfer or not, it is nice to see something distinguish itself from what will probably be 100 others.
Yes. Thank you, public domain laws.
Ooh, yeah.
All right, this is less like theater news and more theater journalism news, but it is something that I think is very important and a lot of people were talking about on Wednesday. The venerated publication American Theater announced on Wednesday that it will be returning to a print edition.
Yay!
For the third time in 3 years. Whether it was through just normal financial things, but especially COVID-19 shutdowns and advertising issues and all of those things. They went to a strictly online publication and they still continue to do incredible work. Some of the best theater journalism will always happen in American theater.
Co-signed.
But as somebody who has stacks on my bookshelf of previous hard copy editions of American theater, this is very exciting. They will launch as a quarterly publication coming up later this year. And I'm excited about it. One of the best things about it is the fact
deeply
that they... Yeah, they put scripts, like full scripts or scenes of new and important works in each of their publications. I hope that they continue to do that. That is one of the great reasons to have those always on hand.
Absolutely.
So I've got the page up right now and will be I'm still technically a member, but a subscriber, but I will be making sure that my membership includes the print edition when it launches later this year.
It's such a rare occurrence to actually get news that publications are resuming their print status, especially lately when it seems like all of my friends and colleagues are out of work. So doubly exciting and welcome because, as you said, some of the best, certainly the best theater journalism, some of the best journalism in general, just great arts journalism and culture journalism across the board.
Absolutely. All right, let's get into last week's Broadway grosses. We had the same 32 shows on Broadway from week to week, but because some of those had previously been in previews the week before, we see quite a few more performances, which obviously helps increase the grosses overall. They were boosted by about $1.1 million to come in at $34,004,232, up 3%. Attendance crossed 2,000. It grew by over 1,100 people to come in at 270,206 people, a 4% increase. But we actually dropped by 80 cents in terms of the average ticket price to come in at $125.85.
Nice.
Interestingly enough, two shows that last week was their penultimate week on Broadway, both Fat Ham and The Sign and Sidney Brustein's Window, actually saw their highest grossing weeks on Broadway. Fat Ham brought in $471,505, up 21%. Its capacity was at 98%. The Sign and Sidney Brustein's Window grossed $633,207, up 29%, and played to 75% capacity. That kind of shocks me that it's still that low. I mean, maybe Oscar Isaac and Rachel Brosnahan aren't necessarily as big of stars to the world in general, but are to us theater people. So maybe I was a little surprised that it was not more for them. The biggest gainer over the previous week was, unsurprisingly, Here Lies Love, considering that just went from like one or two previews to seven previews last week. But from there, what was really interesting is that Leopoldstadt, in what is also its second, was its second to last week on Broadway because it closes this weekend, had a $206,713 increase to come in at $1.13 million. So very excited about that for them. Obviously getting a little bit of a boost from the Tony Awards. The Lion King was the top grosser last week at $2,421,914, followed by Wicked literally a handful of premium tickets under 2 million. Hamilton came in at 1.95. Sweeney Todd, again, seven performances, at 1.89 million, and MJ was at 1.6. The rest of the shows north of seven figures in descending order are Aladdin, Funny Girl, Cursed Child, and Juliet. Parade, which did nine performances last week, so keep that in mind. Moulin Rouge, Prima Facie, Leopoldstadt, as I mentioned before, Some Like It Hot, The Book of Mormon, and Six was just on the outside of cracking that as well. All right, let's get into some other show and casting news. A press release that I got on Wednesday made me immediately think of Grace, but the International Puppet Fringe Festival will return to New York City's Lower East Side in August. I will actually be in town for all of it, actually. It'll be held from August 9th through the 13th at a number of locations on the Lower East Side. This is the only international festival dedicated to puppetry, and it will feature a diverse lineup of performers from all over the world. You can check out everything at puppetfringenyc.com. And what is exciting about this is the whole thing is free of charge. So maybe I will go down and see if something, if it fits into my schedule, I'll see what I can do. But Puppet
One
Fringe Festival.
2 hour gaps between four shows a day.
And work and all of that. So
Whatever.
Yeah. Anyway. All right. So this is something that like, we've talked about before, but I'm still not 100% sure I completely grasp the scope of this. We previously talked about the fact that Goodspeed Musicals will be putting on a production of a new show called Here You Come Again, which is a jukebox musical featuring the songs of Dolly Parton, which is being written, co-written, the book is being co-written by Emmy winner Bruce Valanche. This is interesting. Like, I don't know that we're necessarily getting as much buzz about this, so I'm not exactly sure what this is. Anyway, they announced the two stars of the show will be Trisha Paluzio and Matthew Risch. The show is going to be running from July 26th through August 27th at Goodspeed's Terrace Theater. I guess we'll wait and see about this. If you say Dolly Parton jukebox musical and Bruce Valanche
I feel
like it would have been a bigger deal. So I'm just kind of feel like this is under the radar. So maybe this is something a little sillier, which obviously Bruce Valanche can do.
Sure.
But I don't know. The whole thing just seems a little strange and a little understated for something that I would normally think would have a pretty big buzz about it. All right. The folks over at Wicked are doing something that is very cool. They have partnered with two not-for-profit organizations that promote diversity in the musical theater industry, both MUSE, which is Musicians United for Social Equity, and Maestra, which is an organization that focuses on... focuses on like music directors and conductors and what else? Or arrangers
musicians.
Or orchestrators? Okay,
yeah.
Just musicians in general.
All musicians, all ladies, non-binary folks, yeah.
Yeah. So they are coming together to host a 3-week intensive that will provide a recipient one-on-one access to Wicked's musical team, including shadowing them through rehearsals, auditions, and performances. This is a really, really cool initiative that we're excited about. That, you know, we talk so much about diversity on stage that sometimes people forget that, like, there's a lot of other jobs that we really need to make sure that women, people of color, non-binary people are having the opportunity to get through. Alex Lackamore, who is a founding member of MUSE, and Maestra's chief programming officer, Judy Yin-Chi Lee, put out a really nice statement talking about how excited they were to launch the initiative with Wicked. So if you want to read more information about that, check that out in the show notes. And of course, Alex Lackamore was part of the original musical team for Wicked as well. All right, I've got a handful of feel-good recommendations. I want to run through the first two, well, actually all three of them fairly quickly. But the first is that yesterday I ran through the reviews of the Goodman Theater's production of The Who's Tommy that is currently running through August 6th in Chicago. We have the first look at it, the highlights and all of that. So definitely check that out. Then one of our most, I don't know, discourse creating figures in theater, Jeremy O'Harris, entire 36-minute interview on Fresh Air on NPR, talking about his mission to diversify theater. Obviously, he is one of the producers behind the Sign and Sidney Brustein's Window, and obviously is the writer behind Slave Play, and is working both as a writer and a producer both on film and television, but also himself very, very busy working in the theater as well. So definitely check that out. And then finally, we spoke about American theater earlier. There's a lovely article by, you know, renowned writer in her own right, Amanda Green, about the passing of Sheldon Harnick. She was a former neighbor of Sheldon Harnick, and she calls him her lyric hero. Obviously, being the daughter of Adolf Green, she knows about people who can write musical theater. But it's a really lovely...
Not too bad.
Yeah, exactly. They are... She writes about what she learned from him, her experiences with his works, dating back to when her father took her to see Fiddler on the Roof when she was 5 years old, and then living just a few floors away from him and for years. So it's a really lovely kind of heartfelt remembrance of somebody who played a huge role in, I think, every musical theater lover's life, but obviously somebody who knew him really well and also worked in the profession. That it's really nice and a nice read for anybody who maybe wants to put on a little Fiddler on the Roof or She
Easy.
Loves Me, which is one of my personal
Say
favorites.
Less.
Yes. Absolutely. All right. That is all that we have for today. But I do want to just say I've talked a little bit about it and I've written about it and I've tweeted about it.
Yeah.
Ashley.
Hello.
I mean, my God.
Yeah. Yes,
we've talked
Thank
about
you.
It. Yes.
Yeah.
the Bear season 2.
We talked about it as putting it lightly, rapidly texting as watching.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's just more accurate. It's a perfect series of a perfect show, to put it as lightly as possible.
I will say you liked the finale more than I did.
I really loved it.
I appreciated what the finale was doing. I don't know that it worked emotionally as well on me as the previous 9 episodes did, but it still
it would take
is a really
lot.
Yes, because I wept openly every episode, as you know well.
Yeah.
I will say, like, I did appreciate the conversations that we had because I think you helped illuminate some of the things that were going on in that episode that didn't work as well for me, but I think in retrospect makes a lot more sense. So again, if you haven't watched it, Season 2 of The Bear is available. All episodes are available on Hulu. Almost every episode is like in the like 30 to 35 minute range. There's one outlier.
A couple more. Yeah.
Yeah, but most of them are short, so it's a pretty easy binge, at least time-wise. Emotionally, that's a different story.
Good
mileage
luck.
Will vary on that. Yeah, but
truly,
it's fantastic.
If your emotional saps like the pair of us, then drink lots of water.
Oh my God, I had a headache from crying so much after I binged like 4 episodes. Yeah.
Yup, especially after like the Marcus and Richie episodes. Goodbye.
All right, no spoilers, but yes. Episode, a certain episode that happens in the back half of season 2 is the greatest episode of television I've ever seen. So.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Yeah.
All right, that is all that we have. Thanks for listening to Today on Broadway. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Broadway Radio. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at BWWMatt. Ashley, where can people find you?
You will find us both over at our new Bear podcast. on Instagram. I know this is Ashley.
All right, everybody. Have a wonderful Thursday. We'll be back to talk to you tomorrow.